and welcome to Pink Flamingo RV Radio, the voice of the RV industry. I'm your host, Tracy Miller, and thanks for joining us. Well, joining me in studio, as usual, is staff photographer, audio engineer, the guy that turns all the buttons, flips all the switches, and actually puts this show on the air, my producer and my son, Austin Miller. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Ready to start off a new year with the show.
Yeah, we need to talk about that here in a minute, but why don't you talk about our sponsors first?
Yeah, we'd like to thank our sponsors who started out with us from the very beginning. First off, Unique RV out of Henderson, Las Vegas, Nevada. This is Mario and Mike Shortino, and they are the father and son duo that have been in the industry for over 45 years, and the work that they put out on RV repairs is absolutely unbelievable, best in the business. Also, we have the Auto Collections inside the Link Hotel and Casino on the Strip. This is Rob Williams. They have a 125,000 square foot showroom filled to the brim with classic cars, race cars, rare cars, anything that you can possibly think of. It's in there, and a lot of them are for sale. So you can go down to our website and check out both of those sponsors on our links page or our sponsors page and find out more about them.
And speaking of our sponsors, great week. I got to spend about the last week up in Las Vegas with both Unique RV, Mario and Mike Shortino, and the Auto Collections. I got to visit with Rob Williams for a bit, and I was up there working on, if you haven't seen on our website, Project Mobile Studio, which is where we are taking a 1972 Winnebago Brave motorhome, little shorty, 18 feet, and we are converting that into a mobile studio that we will be able to take out to events, to rallies, just on the road and see what's out there for RVing, and we can't wait to get that done. But it was like way up in the triple digits while I was there. It was very humid because of the thunderstorm. It was tough working inside that motorhome the entire time I was there, but got a lot done. If you go to our website at pinkflamingorvradio.com, there is a more button at the top. If you click on that, it will say Project Mobile Studio, and we are now up to four parts on the build, and we have photos that go along with it to give you an idea of what we're doing and where we're at. It is far from being completed. We ran into a few issues, and we decided we were going to rethink the whole process, and we are back at it again. As I said, I also spent some time with Rob Williams over at the Auto Collections. That is inside the Link Hotel and Casino. Always good to be able to sit down and visit with Rob. It was nice to be able to catch up a little bit, and it was nice to see some of the new vehicles that were in there since the last time I was in. A whole array of new cars in there. We posted a couple of those on our Instagram account. If you get a chance and you're in Las Vegas, stop in, see the Auto Collections. You will not be disappointed. There is such a variety of vehicles in there, as Austin said. Race cars and classic cars, you name it, there's something for everybody. Let us know what your favorite vehicle is. Send us an email. We'd love to hear what you like there. But if you also go in, take a picture in front of our poster, which is right inside the main entry on the left-hand side. It says Pink Flamingo RV Radio. I took a photo in front of it, posted that on our Instagram account, and you can also find that on our Pinkstagram account, which is on our website. For anyone that does not have an Instagram account, you can see the same photos and captions that we put on Instagram. Well, as you said, Austin, this is our second year, show number 53. It's the first show of year number two as we go into Pink Flamingo RV Radio. We would like to thank everyone for being with us and the audience that has grown. And I mentioned a few weeks ago that we were going to have something special on the show because it was going to be our first show of the new year. It took a little longer to iron out some of the details for this, but in the next couple or 3 weeks, we will let you know more about it. We will make an announcement, but let's just say it has something to do with Australia and the vintage caravan hobby down there. So we're excited about it, something that we've been looking forward to, and it's going to be fun. It's going to expand us even a little bit more. Don't forget, as I said, we are on Instagram. Please go there. It's under Pink Flamingo RV Radio. Also, we have an advertising page on our website. If you go to pinkflamingorvradio.com, you will see the advertising page. If you have a product or anything that you would like our audience to see, remember, RVers use everything from clothing, equipment, bicycles, boats, cooking equipment, and yes, even RVs. So if you'd like to advertise your RV business, please feel free to get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. You can get us through our email, which is pinkflamingorvradio@gmail.com. And we are now in 20 locations, so we would love to have you tell your friends to like us. And if you would like to send me a friend request personally, you can do it to my name, Tracy Miller, And there's a gazillion Tracy Millers on Facebook. So look for the blue background. There's a caricature of me with my handlebar mustache. Not too hard to find if you look for that. But we'd love to have you as friends also. Every week, or at least most weeks, we try to talk with our friend, Monty Hudson, who is the president of For Veterans' Sake Foundation, which they offer services to our military personnel and or family members who might be dealing with PTSD. Pink Flamingo RV Radio is a huge supporter of our military and our veterans, so we enjoy the fact that we get to have a part in what For Veterans' Sake does. And what that part is this. There are a lot of veterans out there who are RVers now. Whether it is they or their family member that needs some assistance, if we can help direct them by them listening to the show to Monty and what For Veterans' Sake has to offer, we feel like we've done our part. We want to make sure that any veteran out there gets the help that they may be looking for or seeking out. So joining us on the phone happens to be none other than the president of For Veterans' Sake, Monty Hudson. Hey, Monty, how you doing?
Doing really good. How about yourself?
Hey, everything is great. Hey, with all of the very positive things that are happening, being performed by For Veterans' Sake, you're about to take it to the next level. Big news, big move. Why don't you tell everybody about it?
Well, we've got the move. We're opening up the ranch in New Mexico and making that our primary training facility for the dogs. And it's going to be a place where a lot of the veterans can come and visit us. But not only that, in our move over there, I've been asked to be one of the guest speakers at in Sedona, Arizona, for the War Dog Memorial that they're putting up. They're going to have a big statue made and everything of a war dog. So me and Saxon are going to make our presence there and talk about the importance of canines and how they're integrated into police and military situations and how now they're being used for healing situations.
Well, all very positive. And, you know, everything that you do, we've expressed this so many times on the show. It's all such a positive influence for any of our veterans or their family members, anybody that may be going through PTSD or any of the traumatic brain injuries that you deal with. But, you know, this doesn't happen all on its own. This is great that you're doing it. You're still looking for help in the sense of when you get to New Mexico, if there's anyone out there that's dog trainers, grant writers, volunteers, all of this comes into play for everything that you do in the expanse, doesn't it?
Oh, you bet you. And we're still, it's kind of like a low right now for donations. And not just our organization. We work with a lot of others and we have our conversations. It's donations are down across the country with many organizations. And I don't know, it could be the economy, it could be people hanging on to their money to wait, you know, election years are always kind of weird anyway, but, you know, so it's kind of slow. So those people that know how to write grants and go after the government funds and funds that corporations offer and things like that, we could really, really use that assistance and would welcome somebody that can do that.
Well, and that is a very specialized field to have grant writers, but let's go into the dog training part. I mean, there's a lot of law enforcement canine units out there. They have dog trainers, so maybe we could pull some strings and get some of those guys to come over and help you out.
Oh, yeah. Well, New Mexico, the police and fire chief that we talked to over there, they're the ones that actually came up with the idea of, we sat down and had a conversation back in December when I was there, and they said, Monty, we love what you're doing. We're excited about you guys coming out here. But what do you do when you're done with them? What do you do when they receive their dog and they're out back in the economy and into the community and doing their own things? Do they go back and sit on a couch, but now they do it with their dog and watch TV? Or what do they have to look forward to? And I said, you know, that's a very good question, because I would like to do more. Funding just prevents us from going further. And so they brought up the idea, how about, for example, when they need an arson dog, they only have two in the whole state of New Mexico.
Wow.
And it takes them 2 to 3 weeks to get them there sometimes when they need them. So how about if we can help you with funding, how about if, what would it take for you to train these men and women further to become an arson team or a search and rescue team or a cadaver team? And I wish I can take credit for that, but that is such a great idea to put veterans with, a lot of them are, have that high drive with the anxiety and things that they're dealing with anyway, to put them back into an adrenaline situation to where now they can work with their dog. And And that's the key thing. They get to work as a team with their canine.
You know, that's an awesome idea. You know, it puts the veterans back into a job position. It puts them or gives them a purpose, and it gives the dog a purpose too. These dogs really do need to get out and work a bit. They don't want to sit on the couch all day either.
Oh, no, they want to be out there. And another thing that's going on, we've been asked by a couple of government agencies and some private security agencies about, with all the terrorist acts that are going on with some of these clubs and things like that, where these shootings have happened, if dogs can start being provided to the security agencies or some government agencies. And what we're coming up with, we're kind of forming a council about this, but we can train, say we have 10 dogs and we train 10 dogs with the veterans. Now, three of them or two to three of them might really be drug or detection dogs or bomb dogs or something like that. Seven of them are going to be placebos. They'll be fully trained in advance and obedience training and things like that, but nobody's going to know the difference.
Right.
So that's going to save costs with these security agencies of, you know, having these guys rove around and have a service available to some of these clubs and things like that that have to start worrying about these issues now. And let's face it, as Americans, you know, we're all going to take a hit for a while and stop what we're doing, quit going to the club or be scared. But eventually you're going to dive right back into it. And we all do it. And that security still has to be there. The threat is still there. So we might be able to start facilitating, you know, some of those voids that they have with canines.
Well, I think that's a perfect idea. I hope all that works out. So if by chance anyone happens to be listening that is either into law enforcement, canine training, grant writing, volunteers to help Monty with behind-the-scenes type issues, please get a hold of Monty. The phone number is 855-483-8725, or you can go to Monty's website, which is 4-F-O-R, veterans with an S, and then SAKE.org. Monty would love to hear from you. Volunteers are definitely needed. We want to make sure that our veterans get the help that they need and all the capability with dogs and the training. So if you have any of that ability, please get a hold of them. Monty, I wish you the best of luck. Look forward to every time we talk and find out more about what's going on with For Veterans Sake.
Thank you very much. We'll be out there and doing our thing.
All right. Hey, we will keep in touch. Folks, stick with us. There's more to come. This is Pink Flamingo RV Radio. We'll be right back.
Two Thumbs Up Media is a podcast directory and locator service based on show information published from the content creators themselves. We bring out media creators to discuss their shows as a supplement to the site directory. A great way for content creators to get the word out about their show, and a superb method for listeners to discover new shows which might interest them. If you are a content creator or just looking for new content, head over to twothumbsupmedia.com.
And welcome back. Well, I've said it before, and if there's any one thing, whether working on cars, working on trailers, whatever it is, that I am not good at all, it's electrical. Things can go wrong quickly. And I'm talking about anywhere from burning up electrical components that are very vital to your vehicle, or all the way up to melting wires and a potential fire, which I do not like. And we've talked about carrying a lot of fire extinguishers. So this is an area where I like to go to the experts. And our next guest was on Pink Flamingo back in May, which was on show 47, and discussing rewiring your vintage trailer on a 110-volt system. This time he is back, and we're going to be discussing the importance and the how-to of a 12-volt system on your trailer. So once again, joining us on the phone is our friend and master electrician, also the owner of Vintage Trailer Rescue, right here in our hometown of Tehachapi, California. That happens to be Gary Warner. Gary, how you doing?
Well, Tracy, doing good. Always a pleasure to be with you, and thank you for having me once again.
Hey, love having you on, and especially since you know electrical and I don't, I'm going to have to lean on your shoulders for this one. So, as I've already said in the opening, it's something that I have always been fearful of. I'm not good at it. I've never been educated in it. So why don't we start where it all begins, and that is the plug off of your trailer, plugging into the back of your tow vehicle. Where do we go if we have an issue?
Well, Tracy, the first thing we want to think about is all the people out there who've spent countless hours working on their vintage trailer, getting it ready, and have everything almost perfect. Nothing can be more exasperating for them or anybody hooking up a vintage trailer than to have problems with their the system, the 12-volt system, and mainly what I'm referring to, everything that you that comes in when you plug into your tow vehicle, your marker lights, your electric brakes, turn signals, the brake lights, everything. What a lot of times people don't realize, the 12-volt system, the source, of course, is the battery in your tow vehicle, but it's just like a household. You have to have a complete circuit before any of the lights, turn signals, anything will come on. And think back to when maybe we were in junior high and you had a little trainer board out in front of you, and the science teacher had a battery, went through a switch, and then hooked up to the light, and it closed the switch. And the light came on, and we were all impressed with that. But what we didn't realize is the wire from the light back to the battery, sometimes called the neutral or the return, had to be hooked up for that light to come on. And where this comes into play with most of your vintage trailers, they're going to be skinned in aluminum. And people don't realize, they just see, Tracy, one wire. Say they pull that marker light off that's not working, or they want to clean it up, whatever the case is, Tracy. But what they don't realize quite often is the skin of the trailer is just like an electric wire, and that's what carries the power that goes through your light and ends up back in the back to the battery and the frame of the trailer. So what I really suggest for people out there, this 12-volt system, like any electric system, respect it, but don't be afraid of it. I would really suggest to Tracy for everybody to go, for example, you can go to Harbor Freight for $6 or $7, Tracy. You can get a meter that will take care of every need that you have to make your systems work. And get together with a friend or electrician. Give me a call. I'd take any call that I can help people. And the simple functions, Tracy, on that meter will be everything that they need to do to make this system work. Because, Tracy, I've probably brought home 50 or 75 trailers in the last...
Oh, wait a minute. I think you've brought home more than that, Gary.
Yeah, well, that's probably true. I've only had, Tracy, one trailer that I was able to plug it in and take off that everything worked. So just take your time, people, and realize that one thing that's really important, Tracy, for everybody to realize that different manufacturers of vehicles, your tow vehicles, different manufacturers of connectors, there is nothing the same. You're going to have one manufacturer where the left turn signal is in a different place on the connector versus another manufacturer. So it's important for people to get a tester out, learn how to use it, and pay attention to the function of the wire, not the color, because it will drive you up the wall if you try to do that, Tracy.
Well, and especially because over the age of some of these old trailers, people may have spliced in a different color wire anyway.
The first trailer I ever hooked up for my wife, I had one may have been a marker light wire, changed color 3 feet, three times in about 2 foot of wiring. It was just a gob of big gob of tape. But if people would start with, there's a one part I really want to emphasize to people: if their plug-in from their trailer, if that's missing, gone, or non-existent, there's the brand Contex, Contek, and that, just go to, for example, Tracy, have everybody go to Amazon, put in Contex 7-pin connector. And that's a good start. It's a quality connector. It provides a weatherproof junction box. And then what a person will do is they can plug that into their tow vehicle. They'll intercept the wires from their trailer after you've tested them out. And then you can hook them up wherever is convenient for you, under the trailer, perhaps on the tongue, and you can make a good, secure connection. Because when I talk on this subject, Tracy, at boot camp, this last year, one of the gentlemen asked me, well, I'm just going to plug it in and test everything. Well, there's always a horror story with things. Here recently, I heard of a person who plugged in their trailer to their tow vehicle, and it burned out part of the electronics. It was several hundred dollars, almost $1,000 later, they had the repair fixed. So you need to get a meter, make sure you don't have anything shorted out, see if you have any problems with the wiring, because most of these wires, connections on these trailers, Tracy, are anywhere from 50 to 70 years old.
Right.
And old electric can be just that, old electric. Don't be afraid of it, but respect it.
Well, and the fact that you're restoring a trailer, you're trying to bring everything back to new and usable anyway, you might as well do all the electrical and start with that new plug.
Oh, absolutely. There's nothing. Save yourself, everybody, the headache of trying to make something old like that work. If you can get that connector like I talked about, you've eliminated a lot of possibilities, and you can focus on the wiring from there back to your marker lights, your turn signals, your brakes. Because you know what? All we want to do is tow our trailers, meet up with our trailer friends, have a good time, and we don't want any problems, and we definitely don't want an accident. You want to rest assured that your turn signal, your brake lights, everything is working to help protect you and your family and that trailer you've spent countless of hours fixing it up, Tracy.
Well, and the cheap part is buying all the pieces, really. I mean, once you put it all together, that's not a huge cost trying to rewire a trailer in itself compared to what else you might put into it. So it's well worth going from front all the way to back. You know, I don't know if I mentioned this when you were on before, but you were kind enough to go with Austin and I when we found our Spartan and we picked it up. And within a few minutes, you had that whole trailer wired with an auxiliary wiring or trailer light kit, and we were down the road with actual lights. I'd have been there for 2 days trying to do that and probably been the guy that you just talked about that burned up something electrical on his truck. So there is the fact, though, that I think people have to be comfortable with it. I was just never educated in electrical. I'm fine with everything else. But I think, like you said, that meter, once they get it, learn how to use it, and be able to give you a call if they need to, which is why I wanted to give your information. If anyone has any electrical problems, you need to give Gary a call. His phone number is area code 661-972-0903. You can also shoot him an email at Warner, W-A-R-N-E-R, 93561, at yahoo.com. Or you can go to his website, which is vintagetrailerrescue.biz, B-I-Z. And, Gary, you now actually have a Facebook page for Vintage Trailer Rescue, don't you?
That I do. So we're trying to get up to speed on the technology and everything. Tracy, if I could, real quick, I wanted to tell everybody, you know, it's just the same with me. There's areas, you know, to work on a trailer, you have to be a jack of all trades. And there's so many areas that I'm not even at a novice level. One thing I'd really suggest, whether it be the wiring we just talked about, Tracy, or anything on a vintage trader, go to Paul from the Vintage Trader Magazine. Go to this website, vintagetradercampers.com, and look up boot camp. And what Paul is putting on for next year, in March of next year, the first weekend, Tracy, is that he's expanded his boot camp. We had the initial one last year. Now it's going to be 3 days of training, and he's going to have the entire KOA campground that's just outside of Lodi. In fact, it's the same campground where they host the Trailer Fest rally in October.
Right.
But people, go ahead and look at the itinerary on there, and I don't know anywhere else you can go to get a seminar on vintage trailers where everything is there for you. And some of the people on the list of the trainers are what I call the heavy hitters of the trailer industry. It's well worth it.
Well, and to give you the plug, you are going to be the electrician again this year, as you were last year, and you're going to be doing even more than you did at the previous boot camp. So kudos to you, Gary, for helping people out. You know, I hope that this helps a few people that are listening, because I know it does me. Again, not being educated in electrical, it's one of those fearful things when I get into it. But I can always count on giving you a call and getting an answer from you. But thanks for taking the time to be with us. And then next time, we'll see what else we can drum up as far as electrical. Maybe give somebody else a hand that's working on a trailer.
Anything we can do, Tracy, to help anybody out there, I'll be here for them. And thank you for doing what you're doing, Tracy.
Hey, well, I appreciate it, Gary. Thanks for being with us. Folks, stick with us. There's more to come. This is Pink Flamingo RV Radio. We'll be right back.
Brands and businesses have always had to fish where the fish are. And today, that means marketing their products and services to their target customers on social media. But with so many different platforms, channels, and apps, you need to make your money and your time count. Social media is the single best solution for directly reaching the maximum number of people with your message. But to stand out and succeed, you need to be in the right place, to engage with the right audience, and to market with the right strategies. The Social Solutions Show is dedicated to keeping you on the cutting edge of social and mobile trends, tools, and techniques.
And welcome back. Well, as I've said many times here on Pink Flamingo, we are now deep into the summer weather vacation time. So everybody's got their campers out, their vintage campers, their little trailers, their tents, whatever it may be, and looking for locations. Most people go back to the ones that they're comfortable with, but a lot of you out there are very much into looking for new locations. So joining us on the phone happens to be someone you've heard from before. It is our campground correspondent from Florida, happens to be Lisa Kay. She's going to be telling us about a place that she goes to down there in Florida. I've only seen it in pictures, but I will say absolutely gorgeous. Lisa, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Tracy.
Hey, I got to tell you, when you told me you were going to talk about this location, I was like, okay, you know, Fort something or other, and I didn't really know what to expect. I will say this, and it's all in a complimentary term, it looks like Gilligan's Island. I could stay there forever. So why don't you tell us the name of it, where it is, and apparently you've spent a fair amount of time there. Why don't you tell us about all that?
Yes, I've been going to this park for about 17 years. It is Fort DeSoto, and it is the largest park within the Pinellas County Park System. It's 1,136 acres, and it's made up of five interconnected islands, which we call keys down here. It's mangroves, palm hammocks. It's the home to 328 species of birds, dolphins, manatees, crabs, raccoons. I mean, what else could you want?
as long as they don't invade your campsite.
Yeah. But it's an absolutely incredible park. Dr. Beach actually named Fort DeSoto Beach one of the nation's number one beaches. I think that might have been 2005.
Wow.
But it's stellar. There's a boat launch. The campground itself is 238 sites right on the water. Most of the sites are waterfront.
I watched one of their videos on YouTube, and it was one of their park rangers, and he was saying they average 400,000 campers annually. It must be a nice place to accommodate that many people.
It is, and it's kind of hard to get in. You can make reservations up to 7 months in advance, and people
Holy
do.
Moly.
And they have a pretty good cancellation policy, so why not? You know, go ahead and try to get in. There's three different sections in the campground. So there's area one, which is, you know, tents, vans, pop-ups. That's the tent camper kind of area. No
uh-huh.
pets are allowed there.
Okay.
And they're waterfront sites mostly. And then there's a pet-friendly area as well. And I think that's probably, I think, about 65 sites. And they're all situated along a lagoon, and they're really nice. And then there's another area, which is all camping units, but it's mostly the big rigs. The bigger rigs go there.
Okay.
And there's no pets allowed there.
Really? The big area where the big coaches would go, there's no pets allowed, huh?
No, but the big coaches, they can kind of get into the other pet area. It's just a little bit more tight.
Oh, okay.
The beautiful thing about Fort DeSoto is, aside the fact that you can bring your animal and all that, is that the amenities that they have there, everything that you need is there. There's a camp store. They have, you know, firewood, ice. They rent kayaks and bikes. And there is so much area to explore, including the fort, which is what it's named for.
Yeah, and see, that's what intrigued me when I started looking at some of their photos online, was this actually was a fort out there on the ocean. So, yeah, go ahead and tell us a little bit about that.
Well, Tampa was once a major center. So this is down in St. Pete, Tampa area. It was a major center for smuggling weapons into the island nation of Cuba. So it was a lot of traffic and pirate stuff going on in this area. And in 1898, when the U.S. went to war with Spain, the U.S. Army fortified Mullet Key, which is one of the five keys that compromises, you know, Fort DeSoto right now. And it was the entrance to the harbor. So the fort is still there. It's incredible. It looks like an old Spanish fort. All the old artillery stuff is still there. There's bike trails all around it, and you're essentially right there at the mouth of the harbor to Tampa Bay.
So you don't not only just have to be a camper, but boy, you can be a history buff and go there and really enjoy that too.
Yeah, and that's another thing. With your campground reservation, you have access to all of this area. So you can, you know, take time out and tour the fort and all the other, you know, outbuildings that are there. There's a ferry that goes from Edgemont Key. There's so much to do. It's a great place for families. It really is.
And, you know, it seems like it is so well maintained in the sense that when I watched this one particular video and they talked to the ranger, they had a lot of pre-planning that went in like 20 years ago just due to the fact, I guess, there were some invasive trees brought in. And they said they have now cut those down because 20 years ago, knowing that that would have to happen, they started planting oak trees so everybody would have shade. Now there's shade from all those trees and the palm trees. So, boy, talk about pre-planning. I think that was well in the books for them.
It's a great, a wonderfully maintained county park. It's a Pinellas County Park. It's not a Florida State Park. They do things differently. It's super hands-on. I highly recommend it. I love it. My husband proposed to me on the beach there and 10 years ago, and we went back in just a couple of weeks ago and camped.
Well, so that place holds kind of a special place in your heart then anyway.
I highly recommend it.
Well, let me ask you, because of the fact that the way it's located with the keys there, some of the pictures that I saw, and it said that there are sites that are on the water. Now, is that like on the ocean side or is it on the lagoon side?
They're on the lagoon side. So the beach area is the public access area. That's where the fort is, and there's several like picnic shelters and things like that. It takes a little bit to get there. The actual camping area is one of the keys before you get there. So it's more like lagoon. However, you can fish there and catch all kinds of stuff, and that's where the dolphins are and the manatees, and that's right off your campsite. Basically.
Okay. I'll tell you, though, all I can say is it was beautiful. The pictures that they have, it shows these white sandy beaches that are very long. I mean, they go way out to the water. The palm trees, again, it did not look like what you would consider something even from Florida. It looked like it was down in Jamaica or somewhere. It was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, it really is. And the beaches, it seems like from St. Pete down, like when you get down towards Sarasota, the sand is just like that sugar white sand. It's just soft and it's just gorgeous, and the water is really clear, and it's an incredible beach. Like I said, Dr. Beach gave it its the highest award for cleanliness and all that other kind of stuff that they judge on water quality and whatnot, and I'm not surprised.
Well, and I think that's important. I think if people are trying to plan a trip somewhere, it's nice to know what you're saying because you've been there. Obviously, it's at the top of your list because you continue going back. And for, what'd you say, 17 years now you've been going there?
17 years, yeah.
Wow.
Kind of hardcore.
Yeah, I'm guessing. So, you know, obviously, beyond the fact that being proposed to there, it obviously is a nice place and you enjoy going. So nice to be able to tell our audience that. But, well, Lisa, thanks so much. I appreciate you telling us about Fort DeSoto Park, which is, and tell us again where it's actually located, because I know it's south of St. Pete.
It's Tierra Verde, Florida. So it's St. Pete Beach. If you wanted to go online and look at it, it's pinellascounty.org. And it'll, you know, there'll be something on there to say all the different parks. There's Shell Key. There's a number of things. But I would go to pinellascounty.org to check it out.
Okay. Or I got their phone number off of their site, and you can give them a call for any information you might need. It is 727-582-2267. And, well, I'll tell you, once I make it down that way with our Project Mobile Studio, that's definitely going to be on the list after everything you've said and what I've seen. So thanks again, Lisa. Really appreciate you taking the time to be with us. Plan out another location for us with summertime here. We need to find out more places down in Florida.
You got it.
All right. Hey, thanks again. Folks, stick with us. There's more to come. We'll be right back.
Waves of Tech is the down-to-earth tech podcast for you, your family, and your friends. We remove all the complicated, drawn-out explanations of technology and simply talk about how technology is influencing every element of our lives. From social media and the cloud to tweeting and mobile communication, we talk tech in a different way. So plug in your devices and listen as we get ready to ride the waves of tech.
And welcome back. Well, here we are into segment four, which is our unique RV care and maintenance segment. And joining me on the phone happens to be half of the team from Unique RV, and that's Mike Shortino. Mike, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Hey, doing well, thanks. Let me rephrase that. I was doing well until I spent a week up in your location between triple-digit temperatures up there and the amount of work I did. I'm still sore, buddy.
Welcome to our life.
Yeah, yeah. The RV life, when it comes to the maintenance and the building part of it, is not that glamorous. We thought that we would recover, as you and I discussed, the fact that, you know, not everybody listens to every episode. They may have missed it. And while I was spending the few days at your location, there were three, count them, three, in the few days I was there, came in with blowouts of tires that ripped the sides off, the fender wells, the electrical, the fuel tanks, the flooring, fender wells. It did some damage. So we thought we would talk again about the importance of tires, making sure that you've got new tires and everything that goes along with it. So where do you want to start with this?
I don't even know where to begin.
I know it's, you know, from what I saw on the three that came in, it was ugly. Where do you begin?
The funny part is everybody thinks that they're the first one this has happened to. We, you know, they call us up and go, well, I have a blowout, you know, and it did some damage. And then we're on the other end of the phone with them just naming everything it did. They're like, yeah, well, how did you know? Well, I have a yard full of them right now. You're not the lonely, lucky one out there. But it does, it just destroys everything. You need to realize there's belts, there's metal wires in these tires. So when you're going down the road at 80 miles an hour, it's like a rolling guillotine. It just starts shredding, and it's just like a machete, and it just, whatever's in its way, it just destroys it.
Well, you're right. They did not make up the name steel belted radials for no reason. There are big pieces of steel in those tire treads, and I was shocked at a couple of them at the amount of damage that actually happened. And those were lucky ones compared to others that I've seen there.
I mean, I got a phone call today, and the lady's in San Diego, and she was heading this way. Same thing on her fifth wheel. I had a blowout. You know, it's just, it's summertime, it's warm everywhere. You know, it's 110 degrees here.
Yep.
You know, and so the asphalt's 195 degrees.
Right.
You know, and then it's just a lot of heat. So if there's any fatigue or any stress or strain, those are the first things that go. It just disintegrates the tires.
Well,
No,
I was going to say, let's talk a little bit about the heat. It's not only coming from the asphalt, but most people get in their RVs, they take them out, and they go camping with them immediately. They don't check air pressure.
No.
Low tire pressure is another one to build up heat. So you have heat built up, the sidewall actually wanting to flex on an old worn-out tire. And folks, we're going to get to the worn-out part. It's not what you think. There's plenty of tread left. But that's creating heat. The heat from the asphalt, there's nothing left except for the tire to give.
And they overload the coach. And then just they need to see what the rating is on the tire. And they figure since they have more cargo space, oh, it's great. We've got extra room. And they just add that extra, you know, that extra barbecue and those four extra bicycles. I mean, it doesn't look like much, but it is if the tires are overrated or overloaded.
Yep.
And you're going down the road and they're low air pressure and there's stress cracks in between the tread. It's just, tires, we can't stress enough. It's something you need to constantly pay attention to all the time with these.
Well, so we've discussed this before, and we're going to reiterate it again, which is why we're doing this segment. The fact that you've had your RV out on the road for maybe the last 4 or 5 years, but you've only put 5,000 miles on it, does not mean that those tires are still good just because they have tread on them. The reality is, they're old, they're outdated, and they should be thrown away and put new ones on. And the average life expectancy, or let me rephrase that, the average life that you should have those tires on your RV is about 5 years, correct?
Yes, and by law, you're not supposed to run anything older than 5 years old. Years ago, the tire compound was made totally different than what it is today. I don't want to say it's lesser than what it is, but they've changed the compounds, and they just don't last as long as they did, say, 20 years ago.
Well, tires today are actually made for better traction, so you have more control. Well, with that better traction, they're a softer compound. You know, you can get some of these old vehicles. Look at the barn finds that people bring out, and they've got 40, 50-year-old tires on them, and the people drag it home. That's not what these tires are made for and made of today when it comes to that compound. So
not at all.
Yeah, so for what you have in the way of tread on there, if they're 5 years old, throw them away, get new tires. And the other part is, if you have duals, I think this is one that really slips by people. They think, well, I had a tire cover on there. It doesn't mean anything. The inside tires are the ones that tend to crack more so than the outside.
The heat penetrates through the tires. They just absorb the heat from everywhere. And it's just one of those things. And this is one of those expensive expenses to owning a motorhome, is checking the tires. It's one of those, nobody wants to buy them. Nobody wants to have to deal with them unless they totally have to. But most of the time they'll have one blowout, and then that is a precursor to start changing all the tires. If one goes, all of them are going to go sooner than later.
Oh, because sooner in the sense that like a block down the road, the second one's going to go.
Yes. And we've had people do that. Well, they'll have a blowout on one. They'll put the spare on one side and they'll go down the road another 10 miles and the other one blows out.
Exactly.
It's we can't stress it enough. Tires are one of the most important things that you need to check, because you lose control of your coach or the trailer, you can hurt somebody or hurt yourself, you know, extremely bad.
Well, that's it. Unless somebody's been in that situation, you get a trailer that's now in a out of control sway behind you, you're along for the ride at that point if you don't know what to do. Even worse, though, I think, is what you said, and that is you get a big coach. Now you're talking 22 and a half rims. You lose one of those tires, and especially a steer tire, you're really in trouble.
It's so hard to you're literally standing up when one of those tires go and you're trying to hold on to the steering wheel. I've seen it. I've heard it a zillion times. I mean, it is a very scary situation. And it's just, all you need to do is check the air pressure constantly and just maintain the tires and just check them before you ever move that coach. And if there's cracks in them, it's just an expense that you need to just spend. I mean, it's just one of those things where it's just safety. You can't stress it enough when it comes to tires.
Well, the cost of tires is a lot cheaper than the cost of a life. And the reality is, you can kill somebody just having that go bad. You know, you told a story before, and I think it was on the segment when we talked about tires, that a tire let loose one time and came all the way through the bathroom floor and took out the toilet and everything.
Big time.
That's pretty ugly. And if you think that somebody happened to be either there and they got nailed, or even up in the driver or the passenger seat, those wheel boxes are right underneath you. Those could come through and whack you in the legs.
Big time. I mean, this just destroyed the whole bathroom. I mean, we were literally from the shower to the vanity, we had to rebuild it. And what let loose first was an inside dual. And the inside dual took the outside tire out immediately. So both of them set off.
Wow.
I mean, it was like a double bomb.
Well, there's a lot of air pressure in those tires, too. That is not your little utility trailer running down the road.
No, it is. It is not.
So, again, as I said, even the ones that I saw up there this week while I was there, it took out fuel lines, electrical. And we're not just talking about a couple of wires that went to the back. This was the entire wire loom that was running down the side of the rig. It took that out. It causes a lot of damage. And then if you get into the outside skin, now you're replacing panels and bodywork and paint and everything else. The tires may be expensive. They're still a lot cheaper than all the repairs that have to be made.
I mean, big time. I mean, a set of tires for a big pusher is probably between $7,000, $8,000. When you do damage, when you have a tire blow, you're upwards of $15,000, $20,000. And yes, you have insurance, and that's what it's there for, but why have to use your insurance? Because all that does is your rates will go up after that. So it's one of those situations where it's worth spending and maintaining those constantly.
Well, and like you said, it's a huge safety issue. I am very safety-minded. I know you and your dad both are.
Mm-hmm.
People just need to realize this is one of those very preliminary and very important pieces that has to be done on your RV, your travel trailer, whatever it is that you tow. Make sure you've got good tires.
Big time.
All right. Well, Mike, we appreciate you being with us. Thanks much. Hello to your dad again, and thanks for the help this week on the as we were working on Project Mobile Studio, trying to get that on the road. But anyway, we will catch up with you next week, folks. Again, another episode done, gone, down the road, and we will see you next week. So until then, travel safe and enjoy the RV lifestyle. We'll see you then.